Welcome down to my 9-foot homemade oak bar. Pour yourself a cold one. You are listening to Bucks in the Basement. My name's Chris, and Craig here is the biggest Pirates fan you'll ever meet. Let's talk Pirates baseball now. Welcome to Bucks in the Basement.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say one thing, but then the next day.
Foot homemade oak bar, pour yourself a cold one. It's Bucks in the Basement. My name is Chris, his name is Craig, and buddy, you double booked the guest today. What the heck's going on here?
Yeah, I don't know. I had already spoken with Jason Martinez, and Gary called me up and said, do you want to talk to the Fort for a few minutes? And I'm like, yeah, I want to talk to the Fort.
Yeah.
So basically threw the Fort in there too. I mean, because I'm not going to, you know, turn down that type of opportunity to talk to two great guests in 1 week.
No. Gary Morgan from Inside Bucks Basement. The link for that right there in the show notes. You can check it out. It's where these guys blog about the Pittsburgh Pirates. We've got lots to get to today, but let's get to the Fort right now here on Bucks in the Basement.
Michael McHenry, the Fort. We're going to be talking Fort. You can listen to the pre and post game AT&T Sportsnet. That's going to be coming up real soon. Getting some breakdown, some analysis. So we're going to get a little bit of an inside look here in the beginning. Gary and Ford, how you doing, brothers?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you guys having me. I'm looking forward to talking a little shop and, you know, see what we can come up with this team this year.
So Ford, I thought I'd start out with something pretty simple. We'll go back in your timeline a little bit. I think you and Tony Walters might have crossed paths in Colorado. Is that true?
Man, we just missed each other. And okay, from everything I've heard about, you know, him as a player, him as a person, and just the way he adores his staff and the way he goes about his business. I mean, if you've looked him up at all and seen his highlights, I mean, the guy can flat out catch. He's super athletic. He may be the second most athletic catcher in the game behind Realmuto. And, you know, if you can get a guy like him to hit a little bit, and I'm saying a little bit, he's a guy that could, you know, really complement Stallings. They could probably even split some time left-right approach too. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of how that all plays out. I know there's another guy in the mix that just came from Tampa, but at the end of the day, like, Tony Walters is a guy that pitchers like throwing to, coaches like having around, and he's super athletic. And knock on wood, he's been able to stay on the field. So
right.
And he's still young. I had no idea. I didn't realize he was still 28. I just looked that up recently. Started all my notes for the season. I'm like, man, this guy has a chance to be around for, you know, quite some time.
Well, I thought that was a pretty interesting signing and very complimentary to Stallings too. I do like that approach. I think there won't be any drop off defensively that you notice, I would say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, you know, that's kind of where the game is. If you look at what the Pirates have done this offseason, they've kind of made their team a very positive defensive team. You know, the last probably 5 to 6 years, I'd say probably 4 years, is when they've really been able to measure this. They've had a couple of positions where they were like, you know, -2, -3 in their defensive run save. So now it looks like they have a chance to be positive at every position, even with Polanco in right field. Last year, he was a +2 defensive war. So his zone rating was better. His jumps were better. There's just so many things that were better for Polanco in the outfield. If he can just hit a little bit more this year, I think he'll have a big year too.
It's funny because, you know, the fans that we talk to, nobody would expect that Polanco had a positive WAR last year.
I know. Hey, I'll be honest. You know, he misread some balls, but it was the balls that were out of the normal, like, zone. You know, those extreme catches he caught in the gap and some things he did. He made some good throws, you know, with his arm coming back. So I think that's what really helped him out.
With this year, it's been kind of strange because, you know, Stallings has seen, you know, some of the same pitchers, you know, for the last, you know, 2, 3, 4 years and even throughout the minors. And with all these trades that have happened, he's seeing a bunch of new arms, you know, coming into the system that he has to develop a relationship with. But we all know that in those times in spring training, it's basically you have a bunch of catchers lined up there, and then you have the pitchers lined up. Is there a time where they're wanting certain catchers to work with certain pitchers in spring training, or is it really kind of just who has the opening, or are you trying to, like, you know, build new relationships during that time?
So a little bit of all the above. So some organizations will actually kind of like pair you up, and then other organizations will say, all right, try to get to every guy, you know, at least have a conversation with them. If you can't catch them, sit down with them, go to dinner, whatever you can do. I mean, especially with the pandemic right now, it's hard to do a lot of different things. So you have to get a little bit more creative. But knowing Stallings, he's a guy that's going to spend time around that group. He's going to spend time with the pitching coach, the bullpen coach, and people that are going to enhance his ability to maximize the talent on the bump. And that's the guys you want. Just guys, same Tony Walsh, same way. There's a lot of good character guys like that that want to build up their teammates, which ultimately helps them because they're serving. It kind of takes that anxiety away. So I think what Stallings is doing right now is just trying to find the new guys, get with them, talk to them, understand their approach. And the biggest thing that I love, and I saw in St. Louis as a young pup, they would actually watch all their bullpens. So, like, if Molina wouldn't catch when I was in St. Louis, I caught every bullpen for a month because, you know, I had to stay ready. I wasn't playing. I was a bench bat. That was my role. So I caught every bullpen. Even when I wasn't necessarily out there to catch a bullpen, I'd just watch. And Molina was always there too. And I thought that was really cool. I mean, this guy's got 14 years in the big leagues at the time, you know, a bunch of gold gloves, and it's in the middle of the day. He's out there watching a bullpen in the shade.
There's a reason he has that many years, you know.
Exactly. I
mean, he's a different guy, you know.
And yeah, he's a different breed, and I think that's what it takes. I think that's what it takes for especially small market teams, but especially for guys like Stallings to kind of mold himself into what he has. It wasn't just, you know, an accident that he got, you know, he was in the gold glove talk last year. He's really worked hard at it. He's always been good with his pitchers. Very cerebral, and I think he's going to take it even a step further this year, really right. Working on, you know, those, I guess, runs saved by strikes, and also, like, you know, trying to block just a tick better and really just drive his pitching staff the best he possibly can.
I mean, I kind of wanted to follow up on the Stallings angle a little bit, because I think a lot of people are automatically handing him the keys to the leadership role, right? And that's logical, because that's the type of player he is anyway, you know, and he's that type of personality. But what you're saying is all of the extra work he's going to have to put into trying to learn the staff, and he has a lot of new faces in there. So how does one balance that kind of life? Because I think he's going to be expected to step up within the locker room culture itself. On top of that, how does he separate himself from that if it becomes too much?
So luckily he's not like me, and he doesn't have ADD, and, you know, can go 50,000 miles an hour. So, you know, he's kind of a calm, cool, and collected type. So he's going to lead by example, and, you know, being designated, being the backup, being the third in line for, I guess, 3 or 4 years, going up and down, really never knowing what was next, has set him up for just ultimate success in this role. Because you can't put as much pressure on him now as you did back then. You know,
right.
Not knowing if he was going to have a job, going through waivers, you know, having the family being like, I don't know where I'll be in 3 days because I have to make it through waivers. And then ultimately coming back to the Pirates, you know, probably having a little bit of resentment in his heart, like, hey, do you guys not care? I've done all this for so long for you guys. And then ultimately showing, hey, look, I'm really good. If you give me an opportunity, a chance, I'm really good. And that's why I love, you know, I'm an old school guy through and through. I wish there was, you know, you could run over the catchers at the home plate. I wish you could break up double plays. I wish, you know, there was fights on the field some. Like, I like the grittiness of the game, but I do love how analytics has brought Stallings like players to light. And it allows guys that really care about the game and care about their teammates to enhance their ability where maybe you couldn't in the past. And it's so neat because Stallings went into that and said, all right, how can I get better? Sat down with the analytical guys. I've sat down with him for hours talking about receiving. He would just try to pick as much as he could and then turn it into a gold nugget and run with it.
So there's going to be fans in the stands. You see that? We're going to have some butts in the seats. And you know what I think is funny? A rebuilding team being told they can have 7,500. That's capacity on a weekday. They might not get 7,500 there. I just think it's kind of funny. Like, when you're a rebuilding team, 7,500 on a Tuesday is a good night for you. Like, it'll pretty much look the same. You know, they're going to cry poor and be like, oh, we could have had 25,000, but you're not getting 25,000 on a Tuesday night or a Thursday afternoon for a rebuilding team. You're getting 7,500 anyway. So I'm looking forward to it. What about you?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm hoping that I haven't heard what they're going to do yet. I think the tickets are going to go to the season ticket holders first, and they deserve that for, you know, they probably rolled some of their cash over.
And if they haven't been holding their money for a year, these are the people that they committed to first. So, you know, the one thing that's scary, and I've heard about this with other ballparks, and I don't know what the Pirates are going to do, but I would imagine they're going to have to do the same thing. Season ticket holders are basically being told, well, you're not going to get the first few rows. So let's say you expect to be sitting, like, right on the dugout. That isn't happening necessarily. Like, some teams are going to do it. Some are going to be like, nah, the rule is going to be you got to be about five rows back from the players, and then we've got to spread you out. And you might have had a lower deck seat, and you're up in the upper deck. Like, you might not be where you think you are. But on the other hand, if you have, like, a specialty section, if you're, like, in, like, some kind of section where it's already kind of spread out, where it's easier for them to move you around, stay in that section. I would imagine season ticket holders are getting phone calls and messages, if not immediately today, in the very near future, saying, we have to move you. Here are your options until we're able to open things up more.
And I see no problem with that. I think people will just be happy. I mean, there's probably going to be some disgruntled people, but I think for the most part, people will be happy just to be back in the games, be able to have a hot dog, a beer, whatever you have.
First of all, beer kills COVID. So there should be free beer. I think so, MLB. Like, I'm not saying, like, overindulge. Like, I don't want you to kill anybody, but beer kills COVID. Or maybe have, like, an every three-inning shot of whiskey that goes out to the crowd. You know, hit them three times during a game. Keep the COVID bug off. I had an uncle who used to tell me he's never sick because he drank scotch every day. The germs couldn't stay on him. They would just fall off once they touched his skin. He's dead now, Craig. But at the time, he was convinced that if he was sauced enough all the time, he would never get ill. It's science.
He wouldn't be able to tell that he was ill.
It's science.
Yeah, it's definitely science. Because I was going to go with, you know, there's a good, we could do Wiggle Whiskey, the seventh inning stretch,
right?
Like, sponsored by Wiggle Whiskey. Everybody just stands up and sings, take me out of the ball game, and does a shot of Wiggle Whiskey. I like that.
That'd be
idea.
A brilliant thing. Like, we have to have some fun with it. You're going to have 7,500. I mean, have a little bit of fun with it. Now, I'm going to ask you the obvious question. I hope I know the answer, because I think your answer is the same as me. Are you ready to go back into the ballpark? Do you feel okay doing this?
Absolutely.
Yeah, me too, man.
I'll go back in opening day. If there's tickets available, I'll go back in opening day, man. And I already have plans to go back to, I mean, with minor league coming back, I'm going to be out in Altoona. I'm hopefully going to make a trip out to Indy. I'm going to be down in Florida and just checking out games. And I know that the capacity is going to be limited and everything, but it's outside. I'll wear my mask. I'll do whatever I need to do, and I'll drink my beer, and I'll have a good time. So I'm so ready for baseball to be back.
Jason R.R. Martinez. That's what he is on Twitter, but he's just Jason Martinez, the us from FanGraphs and Roster Resource. Also sat down with Craig this week. We get to that next right here on Bucks in the Basement. Found everywhere podcasts can be found, and always at bucksinthebasement.com. Are you or someone you know looking to learn how to play a musical instrument this year? Then you should be checking out Westgate Music School. Private music lessons for all instruments, including guitar, piano, drums, voice, bass guitar, violin, banjo, ukulele, and more. Are you a vocalist? Are you ready to play a musical instrument and looking to join a group? Westgate Music School offers group classes for rock band, a cappella vocal, and barbershop quartet. Plus, it's all online. That's right. From anywhere in the country, you can learn any instrument you want with Westgate Music School. Gift certificates for Westgate are also available. More information, westgatemusicschool.com.
Jason Martinez, Mr. Roster Resource from FanGraphs, here to join us to kind of talk about some of the most recent moves the Pirates have made. Jason, how are you doing today, brother?
Doing great.
I shared one of your things when we picked up, I think it was Brian Goodwin on the minor league deal, the non-roster invitee, Tony Walters. I definitely, if anybody doesn't do this, go on to Fangraphs. Jason has a lot of great information out there. He's got the depth charts. There's all kinds of projections. I mean, there's just everything on Fangraphs. Whenever Goodwin was signed, you put out something that was like, oh, the next guy that I've added to, you know, the projected bench for the team. And of course, the Pirates go and make another move. Dustin, don't call me Dexter Fowler. And he has moved into your projected bench. So, Jason, I'm just going to ask you, man, talk me through, like, your process in projecting, like, the starting lineups, the benches, and everything with these people that are added.
And this is a really good example. It's kind of fun to go through thought process on this because there's so many different things that go into it. So, you know, the Pirates they're in a situation where they probably can go with a veteran like Goodwin, a little bit of upside where we've seen him go off for a month or two, but for the most part kind of settled into that fourth outfielder on the good team, you know, role, and he's on the team that's not very good. He obviously has a chance to play. So I thought that made a lot of sense, bringing in Goodwin. You want to give a guy like Anthony Alford a shot, a guy who was a really good prospect. He's been hurt. He hasn't really got a chance to play. So you got a pretty good balance there. Now you get the opportunity to bring in another guy similar to Alford, a guy who was a really good prospect and then just hasn't been able to stay healthy, hasn't gotten an opportunity. Now you got two of those guys. You got Alford and Fowler. For a team like the Pirates, you kind of want to give those guys a look. While you also have a safer pick in Brian Goodwin, who, you know, I'm not sure what his opt-out clause is with his minor league deal. He probably has an opt-out a couple weeks into spring training, but, you know, you have a few weeks to look at these guys and go, okay, well, you know, maybe Fowler and Alford both look like they're going to be ready for the start of the season. I know Alford is coming back from that injury. He might not be able to throw. So, you know, there's still a pretty good chance that, you know, there's room for Goodwin and Fowler. You know, if everybody looks good, you know, you take your chances with the younger guys. Maybe Goodwin sticks with you and says, okay, well, I'll start the season in AAA. You got your depth there. If something happens, you know, at some point you'll get a shot. Maybe somebody will trade for him. Probably not. I mean, there's going to be opportunities for him out there. If he thinks he has a better shot somewhere else, he'll opt out. But for the most part, you got three guys there. I think that's pretty much what I was the kind of moves I was expecting the Pirates to make.
Yeah, it's just like a couple guys, maybe give them a little bit of run, but then you also have your safe bet in Goodwin that you kind of know what he is. I mean, he's a good ball player, will provide you solid at-bats, plays decent defense, and, you know, not too much of a risk involved there. Also picking up another minor league contract, we pull in Todd Frazier.
Yeah, I think it's a really good fit because you have – you know, you got a guy who's been in the majors for a decade, pretty much. And at the same time, you got this young kid, Brian Hayes, who, you know, it wasn't a huge sample last year, but I think you look at him going into 2021, you go, that's our guy. That's our third baseman. He's hopefully going to be here for a long time. But he's still a kid. You know, he's a kid who's been around the game his whole life because of his dad. But at the same time, you go, well, it's still not easy to get through 162-game season. So if we got this guy on our roster, this veteran who's well-liked, good clubhouse guy, he's not necessarily there to take at bats away from you, but he's there to back you up and to mentor you. And at the same time, he's probably going to play every day against left-handed pitching at first base. And he's going to come off the bench. And then, of course, he's going to get traded to, like, the Mets or the Yankees at the trade deadline, and he's going to go, you know, participate in a playoff run, which is, you know, makes a lot of sense in all ends. It seems like a great fit.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, a good pickup. And I wanted to talk with you about something about the rosters here right now. I know that a lot of people are wondering, you know, with the 26-man roster, but there's not a limit on the pitching this year. So everybody's been talking about the 13, you know, the normal 13 pitchers versus expanding to possibly that 14th pitcher. Right now, I think when I was counting, I think you went like 13 and 13 right now, which is kind of, it's normal. It's a smart way to go. It's the way that I think of it as well. But I scroll down and I go down to like the pitching and I see like a guys like a Will Crow, a Cody Ponce, a Miguel Yajure, Sean Poppin, trying to think of some other guys that are down here, and Edgar Santana, Sam Howard, Jeff Hartlieb. Do you see most teams maybe switching to that extra pitcher just because of the shortened season last year and not knowing, you know, how far guys are going to be stretched out? Or do you see teams, you know, maybe sticking with that 13?
Well, I think I probably have about 20 teams with the 14-man pitching staff right now. And obviously the Pirates I have with 13. And it really depends on a few different things. And I think teams are going to be, in either case, there's going to be a lot of shuffling in and out of that roster. So you're gonna see a guy who has options. Maybe you know he throws two or three innings for you, and then you send him to the minors for 10 or 15 days, and you bring somebody else up with a fresh arm. And that kind of works the same as having a nine-man bullpen. The Pirates have so many options out of the bullpen. So many different pitchers, and there's not a lot of separation. There's like 7, 8, 9 guys, and then it's like, okay, they all have options remaining, so they can go up and down, they can go back and forth, and that makes it a lot easier to carry less pitchers, because you know you're going to be able to shuffle these guys back and forth. None of them have really separated themselves as far as, like, you know, aside from maybe, you know, Richard Rodriguez, of course, and Chris Stratton, I think, really established himself after last season. There aren't any other guys who you go, well, that guy definitely should be on the roster. You know, Michael Feliz has a huge arm, and he's out of options, so he's one guy you kind of lock in there. Nobody else really is there. I mean, it's all open competition. And, you know, this is a year where, you know, they're going to assess a lot of different guys in the organization, especially that pitching staff as well, because there's so many guys, and, you know, who's going to step up and separate themselves? And so, you know, of course, you got guys like, you know, who've had some time, but not really much. You know, you got, you know, Santana coming back this year, who was pretty good before, you know, in 2019, yeah, Cederlin, Hartlieb, and Nick Mears, and guys like that, who, once they get a shot, and I think that's what 2021 is going to be, primarily for, is to look at these guys and say, okay, once 2021 is over, who has separated themselves that we can kind of lock in for the 2022 season?
Yeah, and I think even Ben Cherington alluded to some of this a little bit, and it's almost like it's like getting creative with the lineup and getting creative for people with options. And like you said, building the rotation more from the minors as opposed to, you know, holding, you know, an extra person on the roster and possibly carrying a third catcher or, you know, whatever that may be. The other thing that kind of interested me that I definitely wanted to get to before I let you go was concerning Cole Tucker. He's a kid that's been called up maybe a little bit too early a couple years ago, just out of necessity, was up in a weird year last year. And now there's just a lot of depth. And by depth, just a lot of pieces, moving pieces at that middle infield position. And right now you have him bumped down to starting in AAA, which I'm not going to hold you to that. But I just wanted to like maybe get your idea of where that could be like beneficial or maybe the likelihood of that happening with Cole Tucker.
Yeah, I think middle infield is going to be probably the most interesting part of the team to look at this year and what they really have to figure out. And I think somebody like Cole Tucker, there's a lot of examples like this where, I mean, think of the difference between, you know, somebody like Cole Tucker and Ke'Bryan Hayes. I mean, a couple of years ago, Cole Tucker was that guy. He was like, all right, he's going to be a really great prospect. Brian Haynes was there, but he wasn't putting up huge numbers in the minors. There wasn't a lot of hype on him. But, you know, Brian Haynes comes up and he's good for that month or however long he was up. And so he goes into the offseason and everybody's going, wow, that dude's a stud. You haven't seen him struggle yet. Whereas Cole Tucker, you bring him up, you send him to the outfield, he's playing all these different positions, he's up and down between the majors and the minors, you're not giving him consistent at bats. And he struggled, and all of a sudden, he's kind of off the radar now. And that, and so it's hard to, you know, if you take a step back and you go, okay, well, why are we not talking about Cole Tucker, but everybody's focused on Key Brian Haynes? I think the team probably has a better assessment of that. But as fans, as outsiders, we're not really sure. So I would say, you know, the Pirates have a situation in the infield where Adam Frazier is solid. He's going to get most of the time at second base, and I think he's a guy who has more value to a playoff team because of his versatility, because of the type of hitter he is. So I think, and he's only under contract for the 2022 season, so at some point he could be a trade candidate as well. And so what you got to do is you got to take a look at Kevin Newman. You got to assess whether he's closer to the 2019 version or the guy who struggled last year. And you got to give Cole Tucker some at-bats, and you got to kind of have to settle on, you know. And it sounds like they want to stick with him in the infield more often instead of having him bounce around, which makes sense because you're going to have shortstop and second base spots probably available to him if he hits in 2021. But at some point, you got to give him a shot. You know, so I think there's kind of a pecking order and say, like, let's give Newman the shot first to see if he's still that guy he was in 2019. And of course, you got O'Neill Cruz there who they have to decide, is he going to stick at shortstop? And a lot of people think he can. And if not, especially if Tucker or Newman show that they're capable, then they probably feel more comfortable moving Cruz to the outfield. And they would be closer to knowing after the season, you know, heading into 2022, where's Cruz going to be? Where's Tucker going to be? What, you know, is Newman going to be a regular for us? Is he going to be on the bench? I think that's why I say it's going to be really interesting because those are three pretty good players. Tucker and Cruz are, you know, Cruz is up, you know, a rising prospect. And Tucker was and kind of fell off the radar. And then, of course, Newman had the good year in 2019. So I think you got some good options there. And the goal is to have a much better idea after a full season.
Some great insight there. As always, anybody, if you don't, you need to go sign on to FanGraphs, go to Roster Resource, check out, you know, Jason's stuff, follow him on Twitter. At Jason R.R. Martinez. Jason, thanks for coming on with us again, brother. Can't wait to do this again.
No problem. Anytime, Frank.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say one thing, but then the next day.